The liver is an amazing organ which controls several varied and vital processes, from converting sugars to filtering blood, producing coagulants, and producing waste. After surgery, the healthy section of the liver even grows again to replace the removed area. But that doesn't mean the decision for surgery is an easy one to make. Today, we'll be discussing the most advanced approaches to liver surgery, but also address when a therapeutic option might be appropriate. Joining us is Dr. Paul Ku, Chief of Surgery at Tampa General Hospital, Professor of Surgery at the University of South Florida Department of Surgery, and General Surgeon for the United States Army Reserve Medical Corps. Welcome to MDcast by Tampa General Hospital, a go-to listening location for specialized physician-to-physician content and a valuable learning tool for world-class healthcare. I'm your host, Prakash Chandran. So Dr. Ku, really great to have you here with us today. We really appreciate your time. I wanted to start by asking, just generally, what are the outcomes for liver surgery in the current era?
Well, liver surgery has really come a long way in the past 2 to 3 decades. And in the present era, liver surgery is eminently safe. There are new techniques and new approaches, of which include minimally invasive laparoscopic and robotic approaches that really make liver surgery very safe and longer the horror that what might have been in the 1980s.
And speaking of some of those advancements, can you speak to some of the state-of-the-art approaches for liver surgery?
Sure. The first comes at the level of percutaneous approaches that may be done by radiologists, either guided by CT or by angiography. And then at the level of the surgeon, we can do minimally invasive laparoscopically or robotically guided ablative techniques where essentially a catheter is placed through the skin into the liver and we can microwave ablate or essentially burn a liver tumor. And patients can go home the same day or the next day, depending upon how they fare. And then for more involved procedures, sections of the liver can be removed surgically and bleeding controlled and stopped using a variety of, again, new technologies such that many people can go home within 2 to 3 days. And of course, lastly, there's the open surgical approach that is becoming more and more rare, but unfortunately remains a necessary tool in the armamentarium in which we make a big incision on the abdomen to take out sometimes up to 60 to 70%. Of the liver in order to rid it of tumor.
And expanding on what you just said, I'm assuming that that open surgical approach is only necessary when a massive tumor or a large piece of it needs to be removed and the other approaches just aren't sufficient. Is that correct?
That's true. But with every day that passes, we can do more and more sophisticated resectional surgeries, sometimes even taking a lobe of the liver, whether it be the right or the left, again, using laparoscopic approaches.
So I want to ask, what considerations go into the decision to perform a diagnostic or therapeutic intervention?
Well, usually the initial entree is, for many patients, is that they've had an imaging study of some kind or another for another reason, and they present having a CT, MRI, or ultrasound study suggesting that they have a mass in the liver. And many times those are sent to us, but there's a pretty set algorithm for how to approach those masses. And usually it starts with a detailed history and physical to make sure that the patient is not at risk for any kind of a liver pathology, whether it be a previous history of cancer or a history of cirrhosis or a history of hepatitis. And then the scan is usually examined by the surgeon and the TGH radiologist in addition. And if necessary, additional studies are obtained, including some serum markers and or perhaps MRI and or additional multi-phase CT scanning. And it's usually at that stage, a pretty good determination can be made as to whether a lesion is likely to be benign and can be followed, or it's malignant, and then additional studies and or therapeutic kind of decisions need to be made.
Understood. And after you go through that decision process, do you have percentages that you can share that detail the diagnostic versus therapeutic interventions?
Sure. I would say interventions, whether it be radiologic or surgical interventions for diagnostic purposes, are relatively rare. Out of every 100 cases that I see, less than 10 require some kind of intervention to obtain a diagnosis. More often than not, the vast majority of cases will point down a benign or malignant pathway at the end of the decision tree.
So one of the things that you touched on, or you may have touched on a little earlier, was just that imaging modality for liver masses. What is the current favored method for that?
So I would say the gold standard is a multi-phase MRI that essentially, in combination with gadolinium-based contrast, allows the radiologist and surgeon to view the liver through the arterial phase, the venous phase, and then essentially the washout phase of the contrast going through the liver. And it's with that that a great deal of information can be obtained about the nature of the mass.
So speaking of the mass itself, when should the mass be followed and when should it be referred to a liver surgeon for evaluation?
Sure. First, it's not uncommon that I see patients who are simply referred with a new onset or newly found mass in the liver, typically on CT scan. Yeah, in the community, if a person who is otherwise healthy is found to have a mass on ultrasound, they will typically have a CT scan, and then they are sent to see me, and we will continue the conversation and work up if necessary. Many times, especially in patients who do not have any potential triggering factors for further consideration. For example, they're otherwise healthy, they've never had a history of hepatitis, they don't have, for example, metabolic glycogen storage disease, they have no history of cirrhosis, whether hepatitis-associated alcohol or even through a fatty liver. And women, for example, who have never been on any kind of birth control, all of those are good factors to have in your favor when a mass is found. In addition, if a mass is small, typically less than 1 centimeter, but depending upon other characteristics, up to 3 centimeters. All those factors go into the most likely decision would be to follow them with serial imaging, usually once every 6 months. And then after 1 year, if there's been no interval change, the screening interval increases. But usually if there's no change over a period of 1 or 1.5 years, chances are it's pretty darn benign.
So Dr. Ku, just as we start to close here, is there anything else that you want to share with physicians that might be listening that they can take away from this conversation?
I would say if there's any doubt, refer the patient on to a liver surgeon. And I'm sure me and or any of my brethren would be more than happy to continue the workup and communicate with the referring physician about a follow-up algorithm and or follow them ourselves, whatever the referring doctor wants to do.
Well, Dr. Ku, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Paul Ku, Chief of Surgery at Tampa General Hospital, Professor of Surgery at the University of South Florida Department of Surgery, and General Surgeon for the United States Army Reserve Medical Corps. Thank you for listening to MD HealthCast by Tampa General Hospital, which is available on all major streaming services for free. To collect your CME, please click on the link in the description. For other CME opportunities, including live webinars, on-demand videos, and local events offered to you by Tampa General Hospital, please visit cme.tgh.org. I am your host, Prakash Chandran. Thank you so much, and we'll talk next time.